Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
And welcome to Food for Thought, a podcast gabfest where in a multiracial mix of queer writers gather around the table to talk about sex, identity, culture, what we like to read, and who we like to read. Food for Thought category is chaotic bottom, and do fuck it up. Thank you.
Oh, speaking of chaotic bottom, aren't two of our four thoughts having bowel issues today?
You know, we actually don't have to go there. We don't. This is literally the introduction. You. Is like the grossest, absolute grossest part of our show. Because, you know, as we're listening to some of the shit that we recorded in the studio that I totally forgot about, I was just like, how are we such foul-mouthed whores for the first 5 minutes of the show? And we get into some pretty deep stuff in the main discussion always. But if you were to judge this show based on the intro alone, you would think we're the most depraved people on earth.
Immediately.
We're just trying to make sure that.
But you look, you set the bar with like cock pasta or whatever. Okay.
You agree your fault, Teams.
I was being clever, and then y'all took that and made it gross.
Semen a keke.
All I know is, bitch, you live in the gutter with us.
That is true.
You pull us deeper into it.
That is true. I am Tommy Teebs Pico, Indigenous American poet, screenwriter, TV writer, and oh my God, the Zoloft hit, and I am good. Like, I am good. Serotonin is quite literally one hell of a drug.
It is one hell of a drug. Wow, Teebs. I'm so happy for you. Happy Teebs is weirding me out, I have to say. I
smiled at a stranger's dog yesterday.
I cannot, like, it is.
You've been in LA for too long. Bitch, you need to come back home.
I'm getting along with children. That's, like, no. I think they're the most special, like, things on earth. I'm just like, oh my God, protect these things. I cannot.
Who are you?
Don't know. I am Zoloft. I am Serotonin. Hello.
Wow. Well, I'm Fran. I'm a writer, editor, and my Imodium just hit. So I'm good. Similar to your Zoloft, my Imodium is chilling. Okay. Works maybe even a little too well, I might say. It's unsettled.
I'm Joseph Osmondson, scientist, nonfiction writer. And y'all, this is just a reminder to pre-order my book, which, by the way, newsflash, Judith Butler just called Queer Pedagogy at its best. Judith Butler, everybody. Judith Butler.
Oh, that's amazing, truly. Wow, that's such a huge deal.
So hard.
They truly put the butt in Butler.
If they listen to this show, they will absolutely retract the endorsement.
They're not going to listen to the show, Joe.
Oh, thank God. They're not going to listen to the show.
Listen, even the greats fall asleep at the wheel once in a while. Hi, everyone.
Wow.
That was savage. I am Dun Michelle Norris, and I'm a reader, a writer, a former figure skater, and quite simply, I am lay tired. I need a nap.
Lay tired? Wait, are you le tired, la tired, or lay tired?
Lou tired.
Lay, because I am all of the tireds, and I'm so tired I don't even want to get laid.
Wow. Mm.
I also love this joke, I am lay tired, which is, I think, from 2007.
Oh, no, before.
I think, or yeah, perhaps even earlier.
Only because I was saying it in high school, and I was amazing not in high reference school in 2007. Regardless. It is an ancient reference.
Mm. Speaking of an ancient reference, Joe, do you have the menu?
God, I do. We start, as always, well, not as always, as often, with a nightlife edition of Swipe Left, Swipe Right, because tonight our show is all about going out and getting groovy, dancing on the queer dance floor, and we end, as always, with a nice little bite.
Mm. Do we have a dessert? Yum, yum,
yum. No.
We'll figure it out.
K.
chaotic bottom.
Keep this in, Alex. I want everyone to see behind the curtain. I want everyone to know how unprepared we are and how we kill it regardless.
Buck, 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 be guck. I'm feeling kind of peckish. I think it's time we start the top of the show the way any good top should, with a little tease. Our uproarious appetizer segment, Amuse Boosh. And to amuse our booshes, it's, I guess, Joe, because you're the only one who did any work on this episode.
That's true. It's reparations, y'all. It's reparations.
I don't
reparations.
Have to lead it. It's right here in the doc. Fran, why don't you do it? I feel like you'll throw in some good ones.
Yeah? Okay. All right, so we are playing a little game that I definitely wrote myself. I did all of the work. And we're going to do some little nightlife swipe right, swipe lefts. Starting with swipe right, swipe left, cocaine.
I'm going to have to swipe left on that because I've literally never tried cocaine before.
Same.
That
same.
Is stupid. You're all fucking losers.
Dee, have you tried cocaine?
So I tried cocaine once in a bathroom at a pride party. Ooh. With two literary thoughts who will not be named on record. But the point is, I snorted a whole bunch of cocaine off of a key and I felt nothing.
Oh.
Nothing. So
it was probably not very
left.
Good coke.
Or it was baby powder.
Maybe it was bad. It could have been
baby powder. It was baking soda.
So I can't wait for our cocaine episode where we're all gonna do like a line and then record an episode. It's gonna be so fun. Really good. Set a really good example for the kids. Okay. Swipe right, swipe left. Poppers in the club.
I am a poppers in the club evangelist. Love it. It is like, because I don't do cocaine because I don't like getting stuck in the drug, and with uppers at the end of the night I can't go to sleep until like midday the next day, and it is just like so stressful. So like I feel like poppers give me that same euphoric hit, and I enjoy it for like 2 minutes and I can go back to that place, but I don't get stuck in it. Love it. I love how communal they are as well. If you bring out your poppers on the dance floor, everyone's like, ooh, can I have, and you make like new friends, and you can like make out with them, and everyone's doing poppers. It's so fun.
It's so fun to be generous with poppers.
Yeah.
I'm gonna swipe left because bitch, I ain't in no club.
I was gonna say, the whole point of popper, like, I just, why in the club? I'm not getting fucked in the club. So
I mean, it's not just for sex, right? It's like, it is a good drug for sex, but even just like with friends laughing, it just like it kind of gives you this head high, this body high, that it just makes you giggle and like be silly with each other. There's this amazing essay that I taught to my students this semester at Columbia. I think it's called Giving Cis Girls Poppers in Gay Bars or some such. We'll link to it in the show notes that totally exist. And it's phenomenal. It's just sort of about this communal experience and being able to help people lose themselves and enjoy one another. And it's like, it really doesn't have to be just about sex. Poppers, I love them for sex, but it's not just a sex drug.
I think poppers are better on the dance floor than during sex. I actually think that sometimes during sex, they throw off your body systems and get you in your head, and like sometimes it hits wrong, and like I don't know, I think one of my most transcendent moments was like being with a bunch of friends at a kind of bad party, and we all did poppers like the second that a Pokemon theme song remix hit, and we were all just like floating, being like, oh my god. Even though poppers are like, you know, social culturally like literally one of the stupidest things that we do as gay people.
Ooh, I will. I will always swipe right on a jalapeno popper in the club. That I will do.
Not in the club. You have one, Teebs?
I was going to say swipe right, swipe left, Molly.
Good question.
I like the feeling, but I can't go to sleep afterwards, so I don't tend to do it because it's like I really don't need to be up until noon the next day, spiraling.
I, for some reason, have no trouble going to bed after taking Molly. It's totally crazy. I love Molly. I wish I honestly had more opportunities to do it. I feel like I only do it when I go out dancing, and I actually don't really go out dancing
really
that much. I go out to see drag. I go out to see my friends. You know, I might go to a party, but I go to like talk, not really to dance.
Interesting. I feel like Molly was so displaced by ketamine in like the nightlife. It was like Molly is like 2012 and ketamine's like 2022.
Yeah. Yeah, which I think ketamine is so stupid. Swipe right, swipe left, ketamine.
I've never done it.
I'm such a...
You've never done ketamine?
I've never done it. That's so gross about gay culture. Me being like, you've never done this rare horse tranquilizer?
I'm actually just surprised that I haven't yet been prescribed ketamine as an antidepressant.
Okay, for the next thought retreat, Joe and Alex are going to do K. Me and Teebs are going to do coke.
I'm going to do Molly because I've never done Molly.
You're going to do all
Den's
of them.
Gonna do Molly.
Den.
Yeah, Den's going to do Molly. Because we know Den is the only one that can actually handle it. Yeah. Literally, Den is the only one that is completely unfazed by any kind of drug or perturbance. Just can like handle anything.
By anything. Yeah. Any life event, any, you know, global political conflict. D is just floating through it all.
Yeah, she's a, like a sexy little cockroach. I'm just trying to think of something that would be less offensive than a cockroach. But what other things don't die? Twinkies?
Probably.
What survives like nuclear warfare?
Den is a sexy little red bottom Twinkie.
Full of cream. She's full of cream, y'all.
Yes, she is.
Swipe right, swipe left. Disco, as in balls.
I love disco balls. There's one right there in my house.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah, I love the magic. It's just like some dumb mirrors on a dumb ball, and then you shine a light at it. But it does something like really special to the space. It's like carbonation for a room.
I like that they do call them mirror balls in the UK.
Mm. And also in Taylor Swift's album, I think Folklore. Or is it? It's Evermore, I believe, actually.
There was one time I got really high and I listened to, what's that Rihanna song? Shine Bright Like a Diamond. And I was like, they're beautiful like diamonds in the sky. And I was like, she's talking about a disco ball.
Oh my God, I've never thought about that. That's a good high realization. There's also a really good You're Wrong About episode about, you know, the disco sucks movement and how the disco ball was invented, which was like basically in some guy's apartment. I can't remember his name. He was like some famed nightlife personality who used to have these parties in like his warehouse apartment, and he had this disco ball that would like light the entire party, and like queer people would come all the time because it was like dimly lit and they felt like they could be themselves. And then apparently like the actual disco movement took the disco ball from this guy and like didn't credit him or something. And here I am not even remembering his name. Oops. Maybe we'll put it in the show notes. Just kidding. We don't do show notes.
Does any show do show notes? I listened to some other podcast the other day and it was like, find this in the show notes. I could not find the show notes.
Here's the thing, ladies. Show notes are for people that have vast teams and systems of organizing their podcasts and spreadsheets and like, you know, constant communication about the pod. And that's just not where we are.
That's not what we do. No.
Now that I smoke weed, the podcast is no longer held accountable to abhorrent levels of organization. So you don't get any show notes. Swipe right, swipe left, disco, the music.
So gay.
Swipe right.
I love disco.
Love disco.
So much.
It's one of like the effects of Zoloft has been like, as soon as music comes on, my body starts dancing. I don't have any control over it. And man, disco is fucking fun.
It just moves your body.
I will say, my one little note is like, I'm a little kind of over like alt pop stars making these like alt pop albums that are quote unquote disco inspired. You know what I mean? Like love Dua Lipa, love Jessie Ware, like love like these kind of like disco-y movements that are coming through in pop. But like, just make a fucking disco album, you cowards. Like just literally like love it. Like love Jessie Ware, but like, it's not cutting it. I need full string ensembles. I need like the deepest, fartiest bass that you can find. I want people clapping. I want to hear like actual hands clapping. You
I
know
think
what
this
I mean?
Might be the only compliment I have for Madonna. And it was that the last thing that I ever liked that she did was Confessions on a Dance Floor, because she really committed to disco in that album.
She did. I will say, I miss New York nightlife a lot, but LA nightlife, the one thing I like is that it ends nice and early.
That is true too.
Last night I was at the club and like the party shut down at 11:55. And I was like, that's right. Pack it up, everybody. Let's go. Let's go back to fucking bed. Everyone get your asses in bed right the fuck now. Like, I do love that.
That's a nightlife I could get behind because y'all know I don't go nowhere.
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 Well, Joe, do you want to intro this discussion then?
Yeah, I would love to. So, y'all, Fran suggested this topic to me, and I immediately jumped on board because I had just had a traumatic experience. I miss nightlife so much. I miss the dance floor. My partner loves to dance. We love to go out together. And he had bought tickets to a battle hymn because one of our favorite DJs was playing, Eli Escobar. We had bought the tickets like weeks ahead of time, and Devin was insisting it was a Sunday night, but work was off on Monday. And he was like insisting we get there at like 9 p.m. to get inside because the line is apparently really bad. And we did get there really early. His friend actually got there at 9 and we joined closer to 10. And the line was like around the block and not moving. And it kept being shouted like, there's one line, there's one line, there's one line. But then I go up to the front just to see what's happening. And the only people getting into the club were the people skipping the line in the VIP. And I got really angry. You know, it's like cold out. We're all freezing our asses off. We all bought tickets. And it's like these little scene queens feel like they can roll up in their SUV and get inside. And that's just like, to me, not what nightlife is about. I feel like one of the things that I love about queer nightlife is it's spaces where people mix and you run into people you're not expecting to, and you meet random people, and you kind of bump into things and people and places you might not get used to. Even when we got inside, we went to like find a little spot where we could dance, and someone like pushed us and said, excuse me, this is VIP. This is our table. No like rope up, no nothing. And it just felt like the space was so policed that you couldn't actually dance. There was no space to actually meet people or have fun. And so I was like feeling so angry and disappointed that this thing that I had missed so much, I was really hoping that we would come back to queer nightlife, especially because in the rhetoric of this, everyone in the pandemonium has been like, queer nightlife is so important, community, and we have to make it more just and we have to make it better. And it just seemed to me that when I go out after the pandemic, it is all of the things that were bad about it from before are actually worse. And it's like taking this space that I love and kind of turned me off from going to these type of parties where they have like really amazing DJs and really amazing sound systems, really great music where you can before like do poppers on the dance floor and meet people and have fun. So I'm just wondering, to stop my fucking rant, how are y'all feeling about the pandemic and if it's changed your relationship to like gay spaces, like bars, clubs, etc.
That was a really great intro, Joe. And like as an aficionado for nightlife, especially New York nightlife, I must say that if you're looking for a nice, great, supportive party, don't go to fucking Battle Hymn.
That's what I know. That's what everyone told me afterward. Like, but it's
still emblematic of something.
I think it's that I hadn't been in so many years, not only because of the pandemic, but I had gone to Battle Hymn when it sort of first started and was like kind of weirdo fags. Like people would get up in costumes and it was never really that crowded. And so I remember it being more of a space full of weirdos. And then I was ranting about it. And one of my friends was like, what did you expect? Battle Hymn is Equinox with a dance floor. And I was like,
Well, that's the thing is like a lot of these parties get kind of, I guess, gentrified.
Yeah.
A lot of parties, you know, start with something that's either like really championing like a certain marginalized audience, really championing people of color, really championing like trans people, or it's like definitely like empowered by like club kids. Like usually good nightlife starts with subculture.
Yeah.
And then as soon as the subculture kind of make it really good and then maybe make it a little popular, that's when it starts to get overtaken by the Unz harness gaze. And I think that is kind of what's happened to something like a Battle Hymn, or something like, there are a lot of other, you know, examples of like parties not in New York that happens too.
It's funny, I was thinking about this because I was like, I'm not gonna have anything to say because I don't participate in nightlife the way that y'all might. But then I realized that like I did go out at night. I just didn't go to like dance parties. I went to like punk shows. And I went to, like, you know what I mean? And queer punk was really important to me. And going to queer punk dance parties and queer punk parties and shit like that in Brooklyn. Because I tried doing, like, the Manhattan thing. And I'm, you know that bar Splash? It was shit like that where I was what is this shit? I hate this place. I feel invisible. Like, I'm desirable. I need to go to a place where I feel that way and it's reflected in the place that I go. And fucking queer punk was that to me. And, like, once I started also like advancing in my literary career, it was like doing all of those weird variety shows and like, like I started out doing poetry, but like, you know, I make the poetry fun. And so I started getting on bills with people like River Ramirez and Larry Owens and Joel Kim Booster and Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang and like Julio Torres and all of those people. And like, I kind of got to like in this weird like subset of specifically Brooklyn sort of comedy variety. Cola Scola, like people did skits and like sketches and comedy and poetry. And it was just a weird, interesting thing. And they were all a little bit younger than me, but it was like, oh, I'm in the, like, you know, that's what I would do. That's where I would go. That's where I would go hang out.
Do you miss that, Teebs?
Absolutely. But I also like, because it seems like that to me, there was like an activity, there was a thing to do, but I was also performing, you know, and I missed that. Like I did it like multiple times a week. I felt so incredibly visible, valuable, desired. And also like I was doing my thing. Like I was on stage with people and that was so important to me. And I missed that so much. I went to one event. I had one reading in December, early December in Los Angeles. And I was so grateful for that because I got to like do my thing again and get witnessed by a room full of people who didn't know who I was. And it was so fucking cool. And that I don't have anything like that in Los Angeles. You know, like I really felt a part of something in Brooklyn and I don't feel a part of anything except, you know, money.
I will say, I mean, quickly, good riddance to fucking Splash. That place.
I loved
blows.
That place.
Ew, Joe, no, don't do that to yourself.
I loved that place.
I'm pretty sure I've already told the story on the pod about how I got kicked out of Splash on their 18 plus night because I had a flask in my like, you know, butt pocket. Not realizing that the concept of like people buying you drinks. I like never in a million years would have thought that someone would buy me a drink. But I also was it was literally the first gay bar I ever went to. But I think it's really emblematic of a really toxic environment that I would just, you know, become exposed to over and over again. But Teebs, like honestly, when we decided to do this topic, I actually felt like you would have the most to say. Because I feel like we've had a lot of conversations about how nightlife spaces, I'm thinking about, honestly, our Kevin Spacey episode. I can't remember what, it's like one of our best episodes. I can't remember what it's called, but it was about like consent in gay spaces.
Oh, yeah.
And we talked so much about, you know, dissociating at the club and like feeling really unsafe in gay male environments and how those are really like hard spaces for you to be in and often me to be in, you know, depending on what the vibe is.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much of it seems caught up in a kind of vanity that I could never get behind. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to, like, when I went to dance parties, it was like these weird queer dance parties in Brooklyn in like weird warehouse spaces or in somebody's fucking loft in McKibben or something like that. You know what I mean? Or like rooftop shows and shit like that. Like, that's what I love to do. But it felt like, weird, but it was weirder and queerer. And then I kind of noticed as I got older, that scene kind of also got taken over and became whiter and it was still punk, but it was just like the new waves of people coming in. It didn't seem like it was gentrified, I think. I don't know. I don't know what it looks like now because I haven't been in so many years. But like, I remember the point at which I felt like I was ebbing away from that and going further into these like weird like variety show nights and stuff like that. And it was like a lot of weird queerdos. And I was like, oh, of course we wouldn't go to fucking the club. Like, we would never feel affirmed there. We would never feel our people there. And I got to meet so many people, so many awesome comedians and writers and shit like who are getting their flowers now. And it's really exciting to see all of those people kind of come up in the world.
Yeah. I feel like the thing that pisses me. Like, capitalism is going to capitalism, right? These club promoters are in it to make money, and one of the ways you make money is by charging people extra for VIP or getting seamy people in there. A friend of mine explained it to me that, like, if you can make, they make the line miserable on purpose so that you will want to pay to not have to be in the line. So the fact that
depending on what it is, right?
I'm just like, well, that is like, but my problem is the hypocrisy that you have basically all nightlife spaces out there saying, we're about a safe space, we're about the queer community, we're about this and that. It's sort of like they've learned the language of social justice, but not the practice of social justice. And that shit pisses me off. When you're using the language of justice to like fucking make money, and that's all it is, and there's no actual traction on like, well, what would a just nightlife space look like? You're actually just making the poor people miserable so that people who can afford to pay more so that you make more money. That's not woke. That's not, I mean, we hate the word woke, but that's not just, that's not an inclusive nightlife space. And so it's just, it's that that really just like beyond, you know, being miserable in the line, these people are on Instagram and other places talking about how amazing they are for changing the game in nightlife. And it's so much more inclusive and so much more safe when it's actually just the same old game.
You know?
Yeah. And also like, people who have very different body types, I think, do not feel that way and have never felt that way. Like even if a space is more inclusive of different races or things like that, there's a lot of different people who don't feel that way for a lot of reasons. And it's just funny because you said a just nightlife space, and I came so close to like spitting out my latte because I was like, that like even conceptually, that doesn't make sense to me in my brain. And I like, for me, so much of that is why I have not partaken much in nightlife. And it only started to change like once I did move to New York, and I had like a really solid core group of queer friends where I felt like I could go into these spaces and know that for me it was a safe space because I was surrounded by friends who like loved me and would just never, like, I wouldn't feel so invisible most of the time. But it's interesting because now that we've had this, you know, all this time away, I'm actually really sort of excited to maybe dive into it again a little bit this summer. And I think a lot of that has to do with being trans and feeling like these things that made me feel so invisible in these spaces and so unsafe in these spaces, are now, like, I'm saying it loud and with my chest, right? And so, like, how does that change going out for me when before it was like, okay, this is how, like, I feel sexy or I feel cute or whatever when I'm femme, but I'm not in a space where that's really okay. So now it feels like it might be a little different, and I'm just really excited to kind of try it out. So I guess we'll see. But also, I'm old and I get tired.
Fuck yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
You know, I'm going to be the fierce defender of nightlife as someone who, you know, all my friends and fam are in nightlife. Like, I produce my own parties in New York and like soon in LA. And like, it's something that has given me a lot of life. And I do think that all the things we're talking about are like really legitimate critiques of nightlife and things that are hard to engage with sometimes. I do tend to find that people that say they just don't like parties point blank period probably had some really bad first impressions and have yet to find the nightlife space that is for them. And a lot of times when we're looking for, like, you know, a nightlife that isn't a battle hymn, usually the thing that we're looking for is hard to find on purpose. You know, like it belongs to a subculture or a kind of underground nightlife that is trying to keep itself secret so it doesn't get gentrified. And, you know, Joe, I do empathize with a lot of the things that you were sounding off about justice kind of oriented nightlife spaces. I think that a lot of like gay bars are coming under fire for saying they're inclusive and then their doorman is like being extremely transphobic or whatever. Like, I feel like I'm constantly seeing stories about that. And that to me is like so like legit, like figuring out how to train and orient your entire staff and every part of your process to make it inclusive is what's important, not the talk. You know what I mean? The Instagram graphic that says you're this inclusive or whatever. Like, it's complete bullshit. However, I do think a lot of your grievances are the fault of capitalism and gentrification and not the fault of a lot of these party promoters themselves. Like, we are, they ultimately are trying to just make something as good as it can be. And of course, people are going to ruin that to some extent, but everything gets ruined. Like,
oh my God.
So, like, you know, you can't fault nightlife for that. You know, I think that if your party was ruined by some bad behavior of the people at the party, that's kind of their fault, you know? And I feel like it's, yes, it is like nightlife's jobs to orient those spaces. But if you have 1,000 people in there, there's only so much you can do, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that price points are definitely a very interesting discussion. But again, it's like, it's they have to make money. Otherwise, it can't exist. And so it all comes down to like how evenly that is distributed and where they're putting in their resources. Because I feel like the people that I know and love and respect in nightlife are paying drag queens and talent and hosts way more than nightlife standard, which is amazing. Because like working for like $50 a night or working for $100 a night is just, it's not a livable wage, especially in like singles, you know what I mean? And so to see a lot of nightlife reinvest in nightlife talent is really impactful. Or when you see, you know, nightlife kind of donating, I guess, to like certain orgs or like partnering with certain mutual aid funds or things like that. I think that's when it gets really good.
Yeah.
But nightlife's still figuring it out. That's for fucking sure.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you that, you know, capitalism puts people in a bind all the time, and you can't throw a party if you don't at least pay people and make money. I do think that there are more just and less just ways to do that. And to me, the notion of slicing up the space into people who can pay more for access to the back room or to VIP or whatever is just so intuitively counter to like the possibility and joy of bumping into people. I mean, literally, you're there, you may be altered, you know, you might actually find unexpected connections that if you're just cloistered off behind a rope, being more important than people in Instagram storying, you're sort of cutting yourself off from that possibility. And I do think that, you know, if you've watched the Jewel Catch One documentary, I don't remember what it's on, but the Catch One was a club, Jewel's Catch One was a club in LA that literally funded a health clinic downstairs. You know what I mean? And I think like Poppy Juice does a really amazing job at, you know, trying to make just parties that are affordable for people that prioritize the communities they come from. I don't go to Poppy Juice anymore because I don't want to be that white guy at Poppy Juice. It's been a huge issue, you know? So it's like, I don't want to pretend like there aren't people who are taking issues of like what a just nightlife space could look like. I think there are people doing it. And I think that makes it even more frustrating when other people use that same language but don't actually have any of the follow through.
Lot of people like to borrow Poppy Juice language, to be honest. I've seen a lot of them in here in LA where it's like, we're inclusive. We're like, if you're transphobic or anti-black, get the fuck out. And then you get there and it's literally just like white guys in harnesses.
Exactly. Like, what is going on?
Can we talk about nightlife and age?
Yeah.
Oof.
Because the last time, like when I was really a part of like some kind of scene or whatever, that was in my early 30s. And then I moved to LA and then the pandemic took 2 years of my life. And now I'm looking at the later part of my 30s. The other night I went out to a bar to get interviewed by The Atlantic for Reservation Dogs.
Ooh.
And I was like, every last person in here is definitely younger than me. You know what I mean? In that way that's like, wait, I was your age the last time I did this stuff. What's going on? And that I feel like in COVID in particular, like the last 2 years is, you know, it's aged me. And like, when they're talking about this as an inclusive space, is it, I mean, I don't know, like, it by virtue of the fact that, like, just more people my age are not doing the same things. They're not going to the parties anymore. They have families, they have lives, they have homes, they have jobs, they have whatever. Whatever it is that they have that they didn't have before that allowed them for a little bit more freedom or whatever. Like, how do you see, like, nightlife aging?
As the oldest thought here, one of the things I love about queerness, at least as I imagine it, is that I want to be 70 on the dance floor. Like, I do think that we have models and possibility in our community for not aging out of nightlife in the way that straight people have to, and allowing nightlife to be a space of finding pleasure, of finding community, of enjoying yourself, and that you'd never age out of wanting to enjoy yourself. And if nightlife is one way to do that, it's not immature to be 60 at the club. And, you know, I have a distinct memory of being, do you remember Sugarland?
Yeah.
Oh my God, Sugarland.
I was at Sugarlands, and it was a bar in Brooklyn that shut down maybe 2012 or so. But there was like a 70-year-old dude there having the time of her life, and it made me so happy to see. You know what I mean? So I always wanted to be that fag.
I do not. Or I used to not.
Dad.
I used to not want to be that one, but. I don't know. I've been thinking, I keep thinking to that episode of And Just Like That when Carrie and Seema are trying to go to the club. Oh, and God. I'm like, that's going to be me at that age. And hopefully I look that damn good at that point.
My God.
But yeah, I don't know. I was thinking about it and I was like, there just doesn't have to be any judgment about this because everyone should have the right to go out and dance at least once in a while. Like, that's what it is. Like, that's what it comes down to. Like, at a certain point you want to go out and do all the things, and then you get to a certain age and you're like, I just want to dance and feel sexy in some stilettos and a short dress because I have the legs for it, which is like very much how I feel, and I've bought the dresses for it. I have a lot of very sexy, very short, wonderful dresses that I cannot wait to wear to the club this summer.
D, we're going out. I'm taking you out. We're going dancing.
Let us please go dancing. It's going to be super fun. Also, I went to $2 bill, I think is what it's called. $3 bill. Oh, duh. $3 bill. That was a fun place. It was the Robin. Anyway, that's off topic. The point is, I think we should at all ages be able to go. And personally, I kind of wish maybe there was a cutoff on the youth.
Yes.
Like, actually, like a 30 and up club.
Actually, that a no kids allowed club where it's no like you allowed. Can't come unless you're older than like 27.
No, no kids and no Broadway boys.
Yeah, no theater gays.
No theater gays.
Disney bags.
No, I have no problem with that either.
So Ariana Grande can't come.
Fine with that.
Can I ask another Kenny question?
And I will be recreating her another ponytail question. Anyway.
I have another question for the group, and that is, you know, I wouldn't say the elephant in the room, but that bitch who won't shut up, COVID, and nightlife, and how you experience it differently now. Because, like, I currently, at the moment, do not feel comfortable going indoors. I haven't been indoors without a mask around a lot of other people in literally 2 years. So how are you rediscovering nightlife, and how are you taking precautions? Are you not? Like, what is the landscape look like to you now?
It's shots and shots, baby. The vaccine shots and shots of tequila to get over my fucking anxiety.
Yeah.
Shots and shots and shots and shots. I was out on Sunday to meet a friend. We met at Stonewall, and it was for this event, and so it was like a club, and it was like the upstairs was packed. And like, I looked up the NYC data before, and the NYC data are really good, and they were still checking vaccine cards, which is amazing. And like, logically, I knew I was pretty safe, but we were both like, oh my God, it's so packed in here. This is fucking anxiety producing like crazy. This person is breathing on me. So it's an adjustment.
Yeah. I had the same thing. I actually went to Hardware last Friday night, Hardware in Hell's Kitchen. After I went to see Hasan Minhaj with my really good friend from college, and we just wanted one more drink. So we like went to Hardware, and I definitely almost had a panic attack. And I was like, I was like, is this the moment that I get COVID? I've managed somehow to avoid this thing for the last 2 years. Like, is this the moment? But I sort of got over it after a few minutes. We only stayed for like an hour. And I kind of think, Like, so my thing is, I did something I've never done before, and I did a Fire Island summer share with my friends. So I'm going to have at least 5 weeks, basically, of nightlife this summer in the Pines. And so I'm trying to mentally prepare for that. And, like, mm-hmm. it'll be summer, so I'll feel a lot better anyway. Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of trying to ease myself back in. So it's like I went to Hardware for, like, 45 minutes. Maybe in a week or two, I'll go somewhere for, like, an hour and a half and have 2 rounds of drinks. But I just want to kind of slowly dip my toe back into the pool so that by the time I'm doing this for my first weekend on Fire Island, it's not, like, taking a toll on my mental health and my anxiety. But it's like baby steps each way.
What about you, Fran? How are you feeling, baby? How high do you have to be?
Nightlife for me is an anxiety reliever a lot of the time. Wow. So, like, I go to, like, blow off steam and to feel better about my personhood and my body. I think that I realized a lot about myself in that, like, over the pandemic, in that I just don't really feel like I'm myself if I don't have, like, my fam. And nightlife is where we could convene. So to me, it's about, like, compromises. Mm-hmm. You know, we make compromises for the things that we want to make compromises for. And so for some people, it's like, it's essential to me to go to the grocery store. It's essential that I get into this elevator, this crowded elevator, to get to this place I need to go to. It's essential for me to get on this flight, mm-hmm. to go to this family barbecue or whatever. Obviously, all of these risks at the COVID level are very different. But for me, it's essential that I go to the club. Mm. And it's essential that I see my fam. It's essential that I bear witness to my favorite art form, which is drag. And I think that is something that we all have to respect about each other. Because I think that, obviously, you know, there's no right way to do this. We all have to make a mistake, quote unquote, in order to live our lives, in order to do what we want to do, you know, in trying to, like, navigate the COVID of it all. But I think that so long as we can, like, make our own choices and continue to hold each other accountable in ways that are not toxic, like, we don't need to create punitive measures or, like, bizarre, like, surveillance of each other. On, like, you know, what spaces we decide to inhabit, you know, I think that it's, like, it's just one of the choices or compromises that you might make.
I don't think I've gotten there. I've definitely not gotten there yet. And I have been out a couple of times, and I could not, I mean, I'll see how it feels on Zoloft, but, like, I couldn't not be aware of what was happening. And I just, like, saw everyone's, like, breath, like, as if it were a different color, you know? And it's, I mean, one of my really good friends had a baby shower this weekend, and I didn't go because I was like, I don't want to be inside with lots of other people. I'm not there yet. And I really want to be there, but it's like, I don't know how to get myself into that space again.
Again, HIV and COVID are such different viruses and such different pandemics. But one thing that we learned from the HIV pandemic, at least I learned and I feel still to this day, is that for many, many years, for decades, because of the fear of HIV, it was always in the back of our mind when we were having sex. I mean, for me, for sure, always. Like, it was never not present. And, you know, the risk for COVID is social interactions. So I think it is totally normal and to be expected that that would stay in the back of our minds. Like, it is always in the back of my mind when I'm in a crowded space. I can still go. I get over my anxiety. I can go. I still have fun. Just like I still had fun having sex, even though HIV was in my mind, I can have fun. But I'm not expecting to have my body and mind feel like the last 2 years didn't happen. They did happen.
I guess the way that I'm trying to get back into it little by little, like, kind of what Den was saying, is, like, I just started going to other people's houses.
Yeah.
You know, like, hanging out with friends and seeing friends, going plant shopping, like, you know, just hanging out with people to just get a social sense again. You know, it's funny because I'll be like, I'll talk to my friend, like, Jana or Cherry or somebody, be like, hey, do you want to get on a call? I'd really like to hear your voice. And they're like, do you want to see me? And I was like, oh, yeah, I do. I forgot that was an option.
And the only thing I'll add to what Fran was saying is that I totally agree 100% that, like, no one can live a risk-free life, and everyone is going, like, I chose to do nightlife before I chose to do indoor dining because I don't actually care. I don't like restaurants that much. Yeah. And I actually like, I really, really love gay bars. I love gay bars so much. And so like, if I have to choose the risk between the two, I will definitely choose to go to gay bars and put my risk there. But it's always super important to just like check out your local, you know, to stay risk aware that like going to a circuit party with 1500 people in the height of the Omicron peak when we're having 50,000 cases a day in New York City is a very different risk than going now where we have 500 cases a day. And that to calibrate your risk and your risk to your community and to other people around you based on those types of tough but real decisions.
I just don't understand the appeal of circuit parties in general. But if that's your essential, I'm not going to judge. You know?
Although I've always wanted to go and literally just be like a tourist, like just walk around and like take pictures and be like, what's happening?
Like and here we have
the mating ritual.
The mating ritual.
The mating ritual.
North American
homosexual.
The North American harness gay.
Do you like getting recognized out at night?
Oh, Fran, you know you do, Fran. Ooh. You know you do.
I just got recognized over brunch earlier.
You know you do, baby.
I mean, I do, and also sometimes I don't when I just want to be like a messy slut, like doing a redacted in the bathroom stall with the redacted, you know? Like, it's like sometimes I'm just like, oh, don't look at me. But other times, yeah, I it's fun.
I hate it, but if it goes too long with no one, then I'm something is wrong. No one listens to Food for Thought anymore. No one listens.
You have actually texted us before when that's happened. I don't mind it. I don't care for it. Like, it doesn't bother me if it doesn't happen either, but I don't mind it. I just like hope that people will like let me be chill and have fun, and you know, which they do generally. It's nothing, you know. I don't think I've had an unpleasant experience.
As a classic Pisces, I hate getting recognized and hate not getting recognized. What about you, Teebs?
I'm very that as well. I mean, it's why I don't go to gay bars alone, because I get annoyed when people talk to me and really upset if they don't.
Yes, exactly.
Oh yeah,
exactly. High Tops. That is a mood. That is such a mood. Oh,
I feel like when we were at High Tops, it was like after somebody said, "Oh, are you the people from?" It was like it's okay to leave now, because we were just like hanging on until somebody was like, "Are you just Food for Thought?"
No, that's so gross, but actually true.
Especially when we're all four together, I mean, it just becomes like bad. It becomes bad.
I mean, the mess explodes.
So this week's dessert is sponsored by hatred and resentment. And Matt, you're going to talk about something that we kind of all adjacently consumed and kind of loved to hate on-ish.
Yeah.
The Netflix Anna Delvey show. What is it even called?
Inventing it's Anna.
Inventing
Anna.
Inventing Anna.
This show just took one wrong step and kept making those wrong steps.
100%.
She really was like, let me go off in the wrong direction. For those of you that don't know, there's this like kind of New Yorker article about a scammer that basically this woman like scammed the upper echelon of like New York society culture and like wealthy trust fund babies into, you know, tons of different things. She just scammed tons of different like money and like things worth monetary value. And almost got away with it too. If it wasn't for you meddling kids.
Exactly. And
this Shonda Rhimes adaptation of it, which we all knew was going to happen, did not deliver at all on that.
It took like the most amazing, wild story, which the it was New York Mag, and it, like just go read the story. Just go read the story is phenomenal. Yeah.
I believe it's the same author who wrote the article that became Hustlers.
Yes, yeah. This girl must be swimming in cash. Mm-hmm. I am livid, though, that this Netflix special made the same mistake as Hustlers, because Julia Stiles didn't need to be in that fucking movie. Like, her as a character was not interesting to me to the story of Hustlers. And similarly, like, I love this girl from Veep who's playing the reporter.
Yeah.
Which is crazy that it's the same reporter, but it's just not the interesting story.
No, not at all.
And I say that as a journalist. There's nothing less interesting than, you know, trying to find stakes in someone pitching an editor to see if the editor will take the story. Like, there's no stakes in that. That's, like, stupid. There's nothing hanging on that.
It was just, I mean, the acting, because the cast is so amazing. But, like, I feel like the director had one note. Be like, okay, we need more tension. What if you just said what you were supposed to say before, but just said it louder? Just screamed at you. It's like the whole last three episodes, everyone is just screaming at you. It's like the only way to have emotional stakes are to shout. And it's in the accent that Anna does is wild. Although I kind of like that part, I sort of perversely loved her, like, the wire is on the way. You know, it just, like,
Zubaya is on the way.
It's on the way.
What? This Pink Panther shit.
It's also interesting that the zeitgeist is tended towards scammers right now. And I'm thinking of the Tinder swindler. I'm thinking of I Care a Lot. I'm thinking of Jen Shah. You know, like.
Jen Shah.
Yeah.
What do you think that, I mean, and the thing about the Inventing Anna thing that I didn't particularly mind that bothered me about other scammer stuff is that she was tricking rich people.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's tricking the worst people. I think that's something that culturally we've latched onto. We've kind of seen scammer articles as this kind of contemporary Robin Hood story of like someone completely, duping a slightly richer person and it being like very satisfying for us as an audience.
It shows the myth of meritocracy, right? That rich people are so much smarter and better than everyone else when they fall for what is like a truly atrocious scam. You know what I mean? Oh, there's also the story of, I think it was also New York Magazine, of the quasi-lesbian couple who like ripped off a Harvard Law professor. And it's like, he's like a professor of Harvard Law specifically around scams. And they literally scammed him out of his, they scammed him out of his home.
Fuck.
And then sued him for, I mean, it's just, but it, you know, it just shows you that these people who are supposed to be better than everyone are actually just normal idiots like the rest of us. Maybe even more idiots.
There's something really, I feel like there's something really satisfying about these stories. Like, I remember when kind of, I think even before a couple of these stories were published, when like Fire Festival came out and like that story was like really, really fascinating to me. I watched both documentaries. It was funny to hear the influencers talking about being influencers. But it was interesting because that arose, like, I'm pretty sure that happened in 2017. And a year later, when the documentaries came out in 2018, I was like, why did I never hear about this? And it's because I was away on a writing residency at the time. Yeah. But I remember, by that point, we were 1 year into the Donald Trump presidency. And part of my feeling, and I don't know if this is really valid, but like part of my feeling is that this surge in obsessions with scammer stories really has something to do with like a sort of collective feeling of like not having closure on the fact that probably the biggest scam that's been perpetrated on the American people of late is him and that presidency, or the idea that our entire economic system or our entire political system in a lot of ways, in many ways, ultimately is a huge scam that we all do not feel that we largely can get out of or necessarily destroy. Like, it's all a scam. So instead, we're collectively obsessing over things like Anna Delvey and Theranos, which does have very serious even medical consequences for people. I'm not making light of that at all. And fucking Fire Festival and these other stories, because the one that's really hanging over all of our heads is the entire sort of system that we live under. But that's just my theory. Maybe that's not fair.
I like that theory. And it makes me wonder, like, my whole, I feel icky about taxes, and I realize why. It's like, why am I as an Indigenous person paying the American government? You know what I mean?
Thank
like,
you.
I shouldn't be doing this.
Truly.
Now you shouldn't be doing this. Story.
All education should be free for all
Talk
Black and Indigenous
scams.
People.
I will hand it to scammers in this one sense. They have got to be the world's biggest optimists. Because they have to believe they're going to get away with it. I could never, I could never have that much faith to think that I could get away with something.
The anxiety.
That truly. That's the chutzpah.
I think it's, for me, it's the anxiety. This person lived for free at a hotel and had no place else to go. And if she gets kicked out, she is on the streets and just like kept living her life. Like,
I have an anxiety attack about like opening the damn mini bar.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Thank you. Thank you.
And on that note.
Scammers.
This episode of Food for Thought is made possible by the generous, unequivocal support of Rosé and our new home at Stitcher. Our producer is the cat whisperer, Alexandra De Palma.
Meow!
Subscribe, rate, and review us 5 stars on iTunes, or we eat all of Den's lipsticks.
Oh my god. Can you imagine the constipation?
I could use some of that right now. I'm Tommy Teebs Pico. You can find me at Hey Teebs, H-E-Y-T-E-E-B-S on Instagram because I deleted Twitter.
I'm Joseph Osmundson. You can find me at www.josephosmundson.com, where you can pre-order my book, Virology, that once again, Judith Butler called Queer Pedagogy at Its Best.
And I'm Fran. You can find me at Fran Squishco on any social media you want.
I'm Den Michelle Norris, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at The Den Michelle, and follow my adventures at electricliterature.com. Mm-hmm.
Find us on Instagram as Gay Sluts Who Read, and join us on Facebook and Twitter at Food for Thought Pod. And finally, send your questions, thoughts, concerns, and dick pics to thoughts at foodforthoughtpodcast.com. As always, that's food, the number 4, and thought spelled how?
T-H-O-T.
T-H-O-T.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.